Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided.
Welcome back. Yep. Which way? Context matters. Undivided how? And who decides? Who's in charge? Who decides? Welcome back to the top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. And, you know, the year of the war discussion, I suppose. Why not? It's long overdue. You don't want to be too much of a Debbie Downer, but it is what it is. These are the times in which we find ourselves, in which we live. Quickly, the announcements. The second annual John Stabmiller book drive has been continued, extended for the next couple of weeks. So that's exciting. Or is it the next? Yeah. Till the 22nd. Make a donation of $100 or more for your chance to win fabulous cash and prizes. Well, not exactly. To win a fabulous book. This week's book, week seven book, America's God and Country, Encyclopedia of Quotations by William J. Federer. It's an impressive book, to be sure. However, you know, and it's interesting. I mean, the title, you know, I think the title hints at my point from last week that we read in our declaration, the laws of nature and nature's God. But I won't get into that right now. It is a great book. And we all should, I think, be familiar with it and its contents. So make a donation of $100 or more for your chance to win. Entrants who have not won in previous weeks are added. And so that's exciting. Congratulations to previous winners, Joyce, Lynn, Charles, Linda, Peter, Claudia. Thank you, and thank you to everyone who's participated. Thank you for supporting the network. RBN will never be the recipient of a Ford Foundation grant. So, and, you know, so it's a listener-supported network. And just, I mean, I've mentioned it before, but just so we know, the reason that PBS and NPR do fundraisers is not because they need money. It's effort justification bias. You literally own the propaganda that you support, in a sense. This is different. My understanding and firm conviction is that's not what's going on here. This is a listener-supported network. So your support is vital and greatly appreciated. There's also the quilt raffle. That's exciting. RBN's New Year Rebel Madman Rabble Razor. Enter to win a fabulous package, including a Confederate battle flag quilt, RBN mug, t-shirt, business cards, and bumper stickers. Winner determined at the end of January. Call 800-724-2719. And leave a gift of $250 or more. If you've already done that in previous weeks, you know, December 10th through the 31st, let us know. You're eligible. 800-724-2719. There you go. them's the announcement. So I want to finish. I was telling the story, the anecdote at the end of the first hour about how we don't know our history. What is an example? Well, I had occasion to visit a local gun club recently. And, you know, like all good patriotic organizations, they began their meeting with the pledge, but they don't know their history. Is it bad to start with the pledge? Maybe. I mean, especially if you don't understand your history. And so I said in the first hour when I was talking about this, that whenever this happens, it's difficult for me to resist the urge to want to do the Bellamy salute. And most people don't understand what that is, what it means, how old it actually is. Predates the First World War. Predates the turn of the 20th century, for Pete's sake. It's, you know, Edward Bellamy, Fabian socialist Edward Bellamy, Mr. Looking Backward Through the Looking Glass Down the Rabbit Hole. He was the cousin of Francis Bellamy was a cousin of Edward Bellamy. Good Christian socialists, which is an oxymoron. There is no such thing. You know, that's like a Christian antichrist. You can go to the Francis Bellamy Wikipedia page and read all about this. Bellamy was a Christian socialist who championed the rights of working people, blah, 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 blah. French philosopher Henri de Saint-Simon's New Christianity, quote-unquote, which stressed using science to tackle poverty, influenced by Bellamy and many of the new Saint-Simonians. Satanist Simonians, more like it. They saw nationalization, deprivatization as public education, and public education as the policy solutions. This is what was going on, you know, indoctrinate people with this mindset. The incubator of those early centuries that the feigned religious persecution created. Look up the nonconformists in particular and see the wolf hiding among the flock. Brought over here to incubate. The idea was what we got. You know, separation of church and state, well, maybe good, maybe not so good because of man's tendency. What is man's tendency? So then, you know, it becomes the melting pot. And we, you know, the great American experiment where we don't suffer long any cultural moorings or traditions. It's kind of a cliche, you know, immigrants come here and, you know, bring with them whatever they bring. And within a generation or two, they've been Americanized, they've been Westernized, their children. And like I said, in the first hour, part of that is the sanitizing of their own history. It is fascinating. Now, in this culture, it's a badge of honor. We're encouraged to know, you know, who Carl Jung or Karl Marx or, you know, Sigmund Freud or Friedrich Nietzsche. We're supposed to know these guys, but not our own family tree. No, but now we have Ancestry.com. Yeah, sure. Isn't that bizarre? Don't know your own family tree, but know these guys. Know all these guys. Back to Plato. I think it's fascinating. So anyway, that was the impetus to destroy all of the, you know, the six points, the six Illuminized points, so to speak. So the 6 points, you know, if you read Nessa Webster's World Revolution, The Plot Against Civilization, you can see those. The summary from Robeson's Proofs of a Conspiracy. Abolition of monarchy and all ordered government. Have we been seeing that? Or are we heading in that direction? Well, not exactly. Now we're going to have a sociocratic, technocratic, communitarian hybrid. So that everyone gets a say, but no one actually has any influence except for a small coterie of folks. They have influence over the masses. The masses have no influence over them or their own lives, you know, over the influencers or the lives of, you know, themselves, the masses, if that makes sense. So the 6 points: abolition of monarchy and all ordered government, abolition of private property, abolition of inheritance, abolition of patriotism. Yeah, but this is hyper-patriotism, right? But it's these things happen first. Abolition of the family, i.e. marriage and all morality and the institution of communal education of children, abolition of religion. Things were broken down, and then the nationalization is the rebuilding of the new Tower of Babel. First you got to break them down, then you rebuild them in nationalistic fashion. So that was what was going on with the Fabian socialists and so-called Christian socialists, which is, again, an oxymoron. Francis Bellamy, Edward Bellamy, the nationalist clubs, looking backward. It's a utopian vision, except one man's utopia is another man's nightmare. So back to the Bellamy salute. Right from the opening words of the Wikipedia entry, the Bellamy salute is a palm out salute created by James B. Upham as the gesture that was to accompany the American Pledge of Allegiance, whose text had been written by Francis Bellamy. Wink, wink. I mean, it's credited to Bellamy anyway. The story goes that he just sat down and wrote it out. It was also known as the... So what are you saying? I'm saying that it's probably Smith in Fabian circles, inner circles. It was also known as the flag salute during the period when it was used with the Pledge of Allegiance. Bellamy promoted the salute, and it came to be associated with his name, even though we should rightly probably call it the Upham salute or the, you know, yeah. Both the pledge and its salute originated in 1892. I think it's a great conversation piece because, you know, both the pledge and its salute originated in 1892. What else was going on around that time? Among other things, the Fabian Society was publicly, you know, announced. Some would say formed. Well, it's publicly announced shortly there, you know, before. And then all of a sudden we get this over here. That's interesting. I thought we fought a revolution to separate from these kinds of people. And Cecil Rhodes says the whole world should be, you know, a British colony. Why? Because that's part of the new revived Genesis 11 effort to, you know, finish the great unfinished work. So both the pledge and its salute originated in 1892. Later, during the 1920s and 30s, Italian fascists and Nazi Germans adopted a salute which was very similar. But it's just a coincidence. Don't read into that. Come on. Attributed to the Roman salute, a gesture that was popularly believed to have been used in ancient Rome. Now, why would they do that? Why would we have something similar here? The result, this resulted in controversy over the use of the Bellamy salute in the United States. It was officially replaced by the hand over the heart salute when Congress amended the flag code on December 22, 1942. Can you imagine? Think about that. At the same time, the Nazi salute was happening and the Italian fascist salute was happening. We were doing the Bellamy salute here officially until Congress amended the flag code on December 22nd, 1942. I don't know about you, but I don't understand why this doesn't get discussed. So, you know, the gun club does the thing, you know, good patriotic Americans start with the Pledge of Allegiance. If we're Christians, why are we pledging allegiance to a flag and to the republic for which it stands? Has anyone read Plato's Republic lately? Maybe we should be a little more objective, exercise some critical thinking. Who was it? Somebody said, you know, you believe these things because you're told to believe them. Let's see. The Grand Lodge of Iowa has an interesting piece on the Pledge of Allegiance. James B. Upham, a member of Converse Lodge in Malden, Massachusetts, was a man imbued with patriotic fervor. And they have the story of his, you know, James B. Upham became known as the father of the movement to display flags in schools and public places. President of the United States Benjamin Harrison enthusiastically endorsed a plan, you know, the 400th anniversary of the discovery of America, celebrated with raising, you know, the flag raising ceremony. There was great excitement in the schools throughout the land during the months preceding the great day of celebration. In preparing the suggested Columbus Day observance to be printed in the Youth's Companion, Upham hesitated when he came to the salute, rededication, to be given by the students. It was at this point that Francis Bellamy, a member of Little Falls Lodge number 181 at Little Falls, New York, enters the story. Upham discussed his dilemma with his longtime friend Bellamy and asked for his help. On a warm August evening in 1892, Bellamy shut himself in his room to formulate the actual pledge. Thus was our Pledge of Allegiance born, and it was proclaimed with great rejoicing throughout the land on October 21, 1892. Those who knew Bellamy best knew that he had fulfilled a deep desire to compose a dignified message of loyalty which would convey the trust of and most noble sentiments of a devoted patriot toward his native land. And all Masons rightfully salute Brother Francis Bellamy. That all is uppercase. The author of the Pledge of Allegiance. I think that's hogwash. He's, you know, credited as the author. Only three changes have been made to the pledge in the 100 years since it was written. The National Flag Conference in Washington, D.C., June 14, 1923, the words, "the flag of the United States," were substituted for "my flag." The change was made on the grounds that those born in foreign countries might have in mind the flag of their native land. 1924 Flag Conference added, for the sake of greater definition, the words "of America" on Flag Day. 1954, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed an act of Congress adding the words "under God." So, you know, that was an afterthought, Christian folks. Some 62 years later. For greater meaning and proper presentation when reciting the pledge, there should be only three pauses. One, after the word "America," two, after "stands," and three, after "indivisible." This is the story of how the Pledge of Allegiance came into being and a long-delayed tribute to its author, Master Mason Francis Bellamy. That according to the Grand Lodge of Iowa. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and 5 easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn you must face them alone. Please remember I still want you, and in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
The white Luciferians will not save you from the black Luciferians, and I am not talking about skin tone. I'm not talking about pigment, melanin, none of that stuff. That's another thing. Speaking of warfare, we got to talk about that probably this year. A lot of interesting stuff. Can you imagine if we knew our history? Something I think that I will get into in the next segment. So, you know, this is the Gun Club. No offense to anyone in particular, but gosh, really? And the thing that's astonishing, you know, some of these clubs were really great. Some of the people were really great. But nobody knows the history of the pledge. It's on Wikipedia, for Pete's sake, of all places. Well, maybe that means it's not true because, you know, Wikipedia isn't that reliable. Fine, do your own homework. Maybe I'm just full of hot air. What is all this stuff, going back to the Roman salute? What is that all about? Why did we adopt it here before the Axis of Evil adopted it? Well, because they were theatrical stage performers. That's why it's called theater. We were engaged in the European theater. Theater? Yeah, you know, those belligerents, those state actors and some non-state actors. Actors in theater? That's weird. Why would you use that kind of language unless you mean what you're saying? I guess words don't mean what they mean unless, you know, until they mean what they mean. The Roman salute is another investigation. It's a gesture in which the right arm is fully extended, facing forward with the palm down and fingers touching. In some versions, the arm is raised upward at an angle. In others, it is held out parallel to the ground. Contemporary times, the former is commonly considered a symbol of fascism. There was a thing called the business plot, you know, fascist coup. And we had a salute, the Bellamy salute, here in America, created by James B. Upham. I think they're both intriguers, Upham and Bellamy. I think this was all Smith somewhere else, fed through these guys, but that's another discussion for a different day. This is all just public knowledge. Why don't we learn this in school? Kids are still doing the Pledge of Allegiance, which was, I mean, think about it. Do the math. James B. Upham, Francis Bellamy introduced the pledge and the Nazi salute to go along with it. Upham, you know, talks about clicking his heels together like a good goose stepper. Like all good goose steppers do. And we get rid of the salute, but not the pledge? Well, you know, it's very patriotic. Right, nationalism is great. It's, yikes. So we get the pledge and the salute at the same time that becomes known as the Nazi salute, the old Roman salute. But we get rid of the salute, but not the pledge. They go together. And no one sees a problem with that. And how have things been going since then? You know, before then, the states were sovereign. You wouldn't fly a flag over your state flag. That would be crazy. Now you're a communist if you fly the, you know, I always want to flip it when I see my state flag beneath the United States flag. I want to switch those. Does that make me a communist? I don't think so. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What?
Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, I don't.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act, the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special. But I'm a
back. Want a perfect soul. What's the point? We're all communists in America. No. Beguiled, misled, yes. And, you know, it's important to know these things because, as we've read here and there, who controls the present, controls the past, controls the future. Or, said another way, one of my favorite ways that it was put by George Santayana in this case. Progress. not regress disguised as progress, but I think he was right. Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. It's not change that's progress per se, but it depends on retentiveness. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve and no direction set for possible improvement. We keep doing this. You know, the celebration in 1892 was the 400th anniversary of, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, blah, 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 blah. And now we can't even talk about Columbus. See how these things, you know, the old Copernican revolutionary worm keeps turning. So no direction is set for possible improvement. Which means what? When experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We are repeating it right now. The worst elements of it. You know, it's amazing. The feigned persecution of the post-Lutheran period was used to incubate this whole deal. The indigenous people here were pushed out by manifest destiny, and they were called savages. They were dehumanized. And now everybody's decrying the army that's coming across the southern border in particular. Shocking. No, it's not. It's just history repeating. Because we are in a state of perpetual infancy, as Santayana put it. We don't understand that, you know, that's the same thing that we did. We were the alien horde. That arrived and colonized this place and displaced the indigenous people. And now there's another alien horde arriving because it's the next act in this theatrical production. Really, it comes down to the story. I'm telling you. You know, it's that. That's why psychological operations and mind war and mimetic stuff and, you know, 5GW centers around this and, you know, the Gerasimov doctrine and liminal warfare. It's all just the narrative arc reframed. That's all. Winning hearts and minds. Making it their idea. Like Bernays said, it will come to him as his own idea. All the better. Why do we say the Pledge of Allegiance? Because we've always done it. No, we haven't. Why don't we be honest about it and do the Bellamy salute or the Upham salute or whatever it is, the old Roman salute, whatever it is, the Nazi salute, clicking our heels together like Upham said we should. If you go to the Roman salute Wikipedia entry, there is the section 19th and 20th century United States, October 12, 1892, the Bellamy salute was demonstrated. Et cetera, et cetera. We've already covered that. As fascism took hold in Europe, controversy grew over the use of the Bellamy salute, given its similarity to the Roman salute. When war broke out in 1939, the controversy intensified. School boards around the country revised the salute to avoid similarity. There was a counter backlash from the United States Flag Association and the Daughters of the American Revolution. Fun stuff. Who felt it inappropriate for Americans to have to change the traditional salute because others had later adopted a similar gesture. Again, we're failing to recognize history here. And, you know, again, this is like black and white Luciferians fighting over, you know, the old technique of infamy. On June 22, 1942, at the urging of the American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars, Congress passed Public Law 77-623, which codified the etiquette used to display and pledge allegiance to the flag. This included use of the Bellamy salute, specifically that the pledge be rendered by standing with the right hand over the heart, extending the right hand palm upward toward the flag at the words "to the flag," and holding this position until the end when the hand drops to the side. Because we're all good Hitler youth. This is what we do. Congress did not discuss or take into account the controversy over the use of the salute. This is 1942. You know, things had already happened since then, you know. Congress later amended the code on December 22nd, 1942, when it passed Public Law 77-829. Among other changes, it eliminated the Bellamy salute and replaced it with the stipulation that the pledges, that the pledge be rendered by standing with the right hand over the heart. This is well into World War II, including America's entry based on false pretenses, obviously, as always, as Patrick Clausen reminds us. I don't know about you. To me, it's astounding that patriotic people at the gun clubs, you know, a lot of those folks are veterans who are painfully, woefully ignorant of our own history and the broader context and the broader historical tapestry. I don't know about you, but as a Christian, I don't cotton to the idea of so-called Christian socialists writing anything for me. I don't pledge allegiance to anything that a so-called Christian socialist would advocate. What fellowship doth light and darkness doth light have with darkness? No thanks. It's not a duality that we're exploring. No. What fellowship hath light with darkness? It's a rhetorical question. The answer is zero. What would happen if Americans were steadfast and resolute on these kinds of things? There was a day when it was a union of several states, not a nationalized, you know, war machine. So it's astonishing to me, the pledge in gun clubs. It's, you know, on one hand, not surprising. On the other hand, astonishing and disappointing to me. What would happen if they didn't do it? And they said, here's why. And as a one-page circular. For anyone who has questions, do your own homework. Here's a jumping-off point if you're unfamiliar. I don't think we should be doing it. It was evil when it was introduced, both the pledge and the salute that accompanied it. Changing the salute changes nothing other than to sanitize the history of an evil thing. What's further astonishing to me is no discussion of the gun, you know, legislation and not legislation, but what do you call it? Policy or we promulgate substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law, that kind of stuff. The ghosts of law, but not law itself, that kind of thing. But, you know, we're encouraged. It's so devilish. Is it a law? No, it's substantive rules of conduct presumed to have the force and effect of law. Presumed by whom? Very evil, very sinister. Getting us to capitulate to, you know, participating in evil ourselves while basically in diabolical fashion being able to say, well, we didn't tell them they had to. It's voluntary compliance. Right, at the point of a gun. It's voluntary. Yeah, but it's voluntary. You can not, you know, non-compliance is, you know, you'll be shot, but it's insane. So, you know, at the gun clubs, they start with the pledge, but no talk of the insane things that are going on in the country. And, you know, but, well, in this state, they don't have anything going on right now, do they? Well, yeah, there are things happening that affect us all. For example, Can we play, William Kirk did a video recently over at Washington Gun Law titled Why Every Gun-Owning American Needs to Circle This Date on the Calendar. Have you heard about this? You probably have. You're knowledged up here on RBN, but can we play that, please?
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Washington Gun Law TV. I'm Washington Gun Law President William Kirk. Thanks for joining us, coming to you from Washington's premier indoor shooting facility. Of course, that's Security Gun Club, right here in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, there is a huge, huge date coming up at the end of February before the United States Supreme Court. It is in the matter of Cargill v. Garland. Now, it is a bump stock case, and so it has a lot of people kind of doing like, whoop-de-doo, what's the big deal? I never had a bump stock. I thought bump stocks were stupid. So what? Who cares about bump stocks? No, no, no. This case is far, far more important than just bump stocks. As a matter of fact, it's going to be one of the most important matters to deal with the Second Amendment to come before the United States Supreme Court in many, many years. Don't believe me? It's not hyperbole. I'm going to connect the dots because there's a big historical precedent here that needs to be shut down. It needs to be shut down right away. For that reason, let's all slow it down for a few minutes. Let's geek out and let's talk about why every gun-owning American needs to circle this date on their calendar. Okay, so we are talking about the matter of Cargill v. Garland. It was a challenge to ATF's ban on bump stocks. It comes out of the Fifth Circuit. The Fifth Circuit has, in fact, found that the ATF far overstepped its boundaries, had no ability to go in and redefine a congressionally drafted statute that had been in existence for years. And for constitutional reasons, as well as dozens of reasons under the Administrative Procedure Act, had acted well outside the scope of their authority. Translation had gotten way out of their lane, and therefore the rule needed to be struck down. Oral arguments on this matter have now been set for February 28th. So listen. Everybody needs to circle this date because this is a huge, huge issue. Don't believe me? Let me explain why. You see, what's at stake here is that horrific and nefarious playbook from the ATF that you have seen time and time and time again. We didn't see it until recent years. You know the playbook. You can't get Congress to pass any type of gun control legislation, so instead you just kind of let the ATF off the leash like some kind of a sick attack dog. You've seen it with pistol braces. You've seen it with force reset triggers. You've seen it with unfinished frames and receivers. And let us remember that this playbook was developed out of the Biden administration's ban on bump stocks.
Bill, that was actually done under the Trump administration.
Oh, in fact, it was. Oh, in fact, SOAP is absolutely 100% correct. Yeah, that playbook, you know, the one where instead of having Congress pass laws kind of like the way our founding fathers designed it to be, instead what we do is we turn to an administrative agency, in this case, the ATF, basically give them an edict, let them off the leash, tell them to go sick them, and figure out a way to ban something. Translation, figure out a way to turn millions of lawful Americans into criminals overnight. And that, my friends, is how bump stocks were banned. And that playbook was actually developed under the Trump administration. And so what's at stake in Cargill v. Garland goes far beyond bump stocks. It goes to the very structure of how we regulate firearm owners. It goes to the very constitutional principles that our founding fathers actually intended our country to be run upon. You see, we have to rein in the administrative state. If Congress wants to change the gun laws, then Congress can pass new legislation. And let us remember that this entire bump stock ban was passed in the wake of America's largest mass shooting on the Las Vegas Strip. And let us also remember that both parties had very, very thin margins in each of their houses. Translation, the political will and the political numbers were likely there for President Trump to do this through legislation. Now, we could have had a debate all along once that legislation was passed as to whether or not that was comporting with Second Amendment mandates, and that's a whole nother thing. But what has been the problem with the bump stock ban? And what's been the problem with the pistol brace rule? And what's been the problem with the rule on frames and receivers? And what's been the problem with the force reset trigger? What is it? It's actually the way in which government went about regulating and attempting to ban those. And that, my friends, was a playbook developed out of the bump stock ban. So the Supreme Court is basically gonna tell the ATF whether or not this playbook is a good one moving forward. And if the Supreme Court follows the law, and if the Supreme Court follows the constitutional mandates, and if the Supreme Court upholds the fundamental structures of our country, all of which I am quite confident they will do, well, then the Fifth Circuit's ruling finding that the bump stock ban was unconstitutional will be upheld. Okay, the date once again to circle on your calendar is February 28th. The matter is Cargill v. Garland. It comes out of the Fifth Circuit, and it has a lot more to do than just bump stocks. If you got any other questions about this or anything else related to what's left of our Second Amendment rights, you guys should know how to get a hold of Washington Gun Law by now. If you don't, that's okay. That information is right down there in the description box. Now, in the meantime, let's everyone remember that part of being the lawful and responsible gun owner, like we talk about all the time here, is to know what the law is in every situation, how it applies to you in any instance that you may find yourself. Until next time, thanks for watching, and stay safe.
Bang, bang, there you go. So, if you've been listening to this broadcast in particular for any length of time, you know that for years and years, and not just me, other people talked about the significance and the importance of the administrative fourth branch, what it represents, how it operates, and that peculiar phrase, when the state creates rights and individuals against itself, that phrase dating back to Louis Brandeis, that the true seeker of the far north, Ralph Winter Road, would remind us of occasionally from 1919, United States versus Babcock. When the state creates rights and individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts. Ooh. Now what's going on here? When the state creates rights and individuals against itself, it is... now I forgot. What is it? See, that's what happens. You get distracted. When the state creates rights, individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts, and it may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. I believe that's it. You know that thing when you do a thing and you're like, I don't, and then you try to explain how you do it, you can't explain it, that kind of thing. Anyway, the point is the administrative fourth branch and its new Bill of Rights, as Senator Pat McCarran said in 1946, the Administrative Procedure Act, is behaving precisely according to, you know, how it was made. Again, if we knew this history, we would understand this. And I just find it astonishing that at local gun clubs, they're talking about the Pledge of Allegiance, the Nazi fascist Roman salute, Pledge of Allegiance. They're doing that, but they're not talking about this kind of stuff. It is astounding to me. I mean, really, it just leaves me speechless. Anyway, on that note, to the phones, Mike in Kentucky, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Well, since I was on hold there, you've kind of jumped away from what I called about. The Christians should be alarmed by the Pledge of Allegiance because of a verse and a song they sing. If I be lifted up, I'll draw you to me. You've heard that one, right? And what I've read about, and Rex Curry, a lawyer out of Florida, has copyrighted, I don't know how he can do that, but he's copyrighted a bunch of these pictures of these mostly minority schools where the Bellamy salute was initiated. And it was supposed to be palm up as an exaltation of the flag as they raised it up on the pole. So if you do that, though, you'll find, especially young children probably, it's not easy to flip your thumb around and raise your palm up like that. So a lot of them just lazily flip their hand over. And so that palm up salute that Hitler was doing, if you've noticed what he did, he threw his arm back. So his palm was up as the crowd is saluting him with their palm down. But that in principle or in concept, if I be lifted up, I'll draw you to me, is a false god. You're exalting of the flag as an icon or an image. much the same mistake that the Orthodox and Catholics do. They make these carved images and pray for them to make intercessionary prayer for them. You know, yeah, they excuse it as asking, you know, for someone else to pray for them. But that's my distinction I'd like to make on the pledge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the bureaucracy and what you said about remedy. From what I've read and heard, the law priests are all about remedy. You can't deny the courts to provide a remedy. Otherwise, you invite violence, basically.
Well, it gets
There's
into
no
the issue of
the courts,
contract.
How's it
that
go, Carter, right?
Gets into the issue of contract that Jim was talking about, for example, yesterday. And I forget how he phrased it, but he made some valid points, as I'm sure you No, but
I couldn't catch yesterday's show. So
it's, you know, these conveniences that we get seduced and lured into.
Yeah.
That you know, again, in the words of Senator Pat McCarran, in 1946, when they were passing the Administrative Procedure Act, he said Senate Bill 7, which became the APA, is a Bill of Rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. And so that's the thing people don't realize, that, you know, like Jim was saying, it boils down to the power of contract and the imaginary conveniences, as he put it, that are as a result.
All law is contract, is the old saying, but I would invite
choose
you
this day whom you may serve.
I put that to a paralegal a few years ago.
That's the bottom line.
Bottom line is, this guy that I talked to a paralegal about says, well, that guy wasn't a U.S. citizen. He was an undocumented migrant, so he wasn't a subject of the United States. So if that's the case, we all need to just relinquish our U.S. citizenship, and the Commerce Clause no longer applies. That was the law professors wrote about that in their thesis, that U.S. versus Lopez would undo 50 years of Commerce Clause abuse by the federal government, put them back in their box. Turned out, though, that Lopez was not a U.S. citizen, so he wasn't a, quote, subject. That's the argument. Anyway, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you, Mike. Much appreciated, as always. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how Jim put it, but imaginary conveniences that we, you know, are seduced or enticed to latch on to. Adhesion contracts are an interesting discussion. The different straw men jurisdictions. Fictional conveniences, I think, is the way that Jim put it, for these freaks of nature. Yeah, they're not of nature, and that was the point that he was making. These contrivances to lead us astray. But only if we agree to it, which again gets back to that, you know, the peculiar phrase and the substantive rules and so forth. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.